This episode of Due North Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Sportsman's Guide. For everything you need to enjoy the fun, freedom, and traditions of the outdoors, you got to check out sportsmansguide.com. From hunting and fishing to camping, hiking, and just hanging around a bonfire in the backyard, you'll find it all at Sportsman's Guide. Tree stands, blinds, rods and reels, ATV accessories, and so much more. Clothing and footwear, too, from top-notch brands like Scentlock, Nomad, Mountain Hardware, Irish Setter, Danner. The list just keeps on going. Plus, a full line of firearms, ammo, and accessories. The bottom line, if it happens outdoors, you'll find it at Sportsman's Guide. Shop today at sportsmansguide.com and use the code DUENORTH for $20 off your first order. That's DUENORTH, all one word, for $20 off your first order. All right. Welcome to another episode of the Due North Outdoors podcast. I'm Travis Frank. I am one of your hosts, Natalie Dillon. Sitting right across from me is the other host, Brandon Morton. To my right, Natalie's left.
And we got Daisy here.
And
can we throw her in?
My dog, Daisy. Yes, yes. We did a bit of training this morning. Hunting season will be here before you know it.
How's she doing? Well, she's an old pro at this point.
I would say no. She's a young pro.
Young pro, yes.
She just turned two, and she's had two hunting seasons under her belt. This is kind of the year when a lot of people say, you know, when they're a two-year-old dog, they're technically an adult now.
Okay.
So no more.
Welcome to adulthood,
yes,
Daisy.
Yes. So the training wheels are off completely, and she gets held accountable for all of those mistakes that cost us all the birds in the field. But it's a big deal because, you know, we host two bird hunting shows too, The Flush and Rooster Tails, and you know, we hunt all over the country and obviously very blessed to be able to do that, but there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I can imagine.
There's a lot of pressure.
I'm sure she actually feels it, you know?
She doesn't give a rip.
No, she
doesn't. All she wants to do is hunt. I get all the pressure because there's my dog out there and she's got to perform. People think like, oh yeah, he's got this well-trained dog and, you know, I try my best.
You make a great team.
Yeah, yeah. She is a rock star and she's a sweetheart when we're not hunting. And when we're hunting, you see her and she's just in a completely different Brandon's are. Yeah. And she doesn't want anything to do with us. There's no love and affection out there. She's all birds.
Just straight focus.
Straight focus. Yes. She is a hunter.
Well, in the course of this podcast today, if I ever go silent, if I'm totally distracted, you know why. It's because I'm sitting over here making eyes at Daisy.
Yeah. All right.
Let's get right to it
because we're going to fly through this episode. We are going to do something a little bit different.
We might have some.
Are you going to fly?
There's going to be some flying.
Okay.
There's going to be some flying.
Good. Okay. So Natalie and I thought we're still at the, like, we're getting into the heart of summer right now. A lot of people have made their summer plans and I hope you do. I hope you have. But if you haven't, we want to throw out a bunch of ideas that will be good ideas for fishing destinations for the rest of this summer leading into fall. I think it's fair to dig into some of the places. I came up with 10 places. We both had an assignment.
Like,
you did?
Yeah. Yeah. So we planned 10. I'll say I have like kind of 9, but it's almost like 13 because a couple of mine have a lot.
I was
going to
say I got 14.
Yeah.
I couldn't pick.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are going to be places that a lot of people have heard. A couple of them are going to be some, you know, I don't know if they're secret places necessarily, but places that I've been and I have filmed episodes in the past that I can dig into a little bit more. Adventures that are really
fishing destinations.
Yeah, like put on your bucket list someday and knock it out.
Yeah. Some of mine, a lot are going to be things people can definitely do, you know, this summer or this year. Mm-hmm. A couple are going to be more of a long-term bucket list.
Well, and so I think when you and I discussed this, we thought, let's stick Midwest. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I've been places outside of this.
You
did?
I went rogue.
You
cheated. I cheated on a couple.
Come on. We can do another show with destinations outside of the country because you've been to some pretty cool places.
True.
Okay. Let's not change your list. We'll see how far we get in this
one. We'll stick to the regional
ones
this time.
So approximately like 28. Yeah. 28, top 28 here.
Clock is ticking.
I'll go first. Okay. I'll go first and kick this off and then we'll just go every other.
Yeah. And we might
start with
our
number one in case we run out of time. Okay. We are on a time limit today. So my my first place was like a 1A and 1B, but the Boundary Waters in Minnesota. And Natalie, I know you just went up there, and that maybe is now on your list because you've been there. But I've been going to the Boundary Waters for about 20 years with a group of buddies, and we have that gem in this state. And people from when I go to different destinations, and you know, like New Mexico or Nevada or something, and I'm hunting or fishing with somebody, they talk about the Boundary Waters. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that we don't realize how special it is. We can take it for granted. So when you get up there, it's so remote. And that's the cool part about it.
And yet so accessible. And that's something. Yes. So I actually just went to the Boundary Waters this year for the first time. I won't hijack your choice too much.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to go forever. I've done lots of camping. Mm-hmm. But it just for some reason, the actual Boundary Waters hasn't been on my list. And something that stood out to me almost above everything, it exceeded my expectations in so many ways from how remote it was, how beautiful. We had just an amazing time. But I also left saying, really anybody can do this with a little preparation. There's some campsites that are super, you know, accessible right from towns or outfitters. And we actually went through an outfitter, and it was really, it was something that, you know, you want to do your research ahead of time. It's great to go with somebody who's been and everything. Yep. But I think that there's probably a lot of people that are more intimidated by it than they need to be.
Exactly. There's two different ways. Well, actually, there's a couple ways you can go about it. You can get a day permit to go in. You can get the full permit, which allows you to go in for a longer period of time with, depending on the permit you get, you can go with up to 9 people, which is what I've had several times, a group of buddies. And this started back in school, and we started going summer, and we'd go late spring or early summer, late spring, right after Memorial Day. It was kind of our entry into it. And there's a lot of entry points into the Boundary Waters. There's two options. You can do just a full canoe option. There's also a few lakes that you can get into with motors up to 25 horsepower, and you still get the same experience, not quite as remote. Those tend to have a little bit more people on them. Either way, they're great. And so when we've done it, we haven't portaged. We set up camp one time.
Yeah.
We've got kind of our milk
around
the spots.
Have you ever had a canoe over your head before? Got to try it at least once.
Yeah. So I have not done it that way. We've done the motor entry in, because that's what my buddies did with their dad, with their dads. And then we built this wheel system on our boats. Mm. So we the wheels come up on the front and the back, two on the back, one on the front. And then there's a pin system that you pull the pin, drop the wheel, and then put the pin back in, and we push it across. So we go in heavy. Yeah. People look at us and they're like, oh my gosh, like that's ridiculous how much you're going in. But like, we're cooking steak.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got, right. We do not mess around. I mean, and some people bring in some beverages more than they should, you know, and that weighs a lot. And so we've learned
truly
a lot.
Truly sounds like a guy's trip.
It is. It is. We set up camp one time. We portaged, I think we do 3 portages to get where we want to go. We set up camp one time, and the fishing is amazing. Smallmouth bass. Well, walleye first, smallmouth bass, but there are some lakes then that we portage into, and the pan fishing is amazing.
Yeah.
Northern pike is awesome. Lake trout.
I was going to say, have you done much lake trout fishing up
Not
there?
Not a lot. Okay. A little bit. Just scratch the surface on it. And that really depends on the water temperatures, the time of the season, where they're at, which lakes, because it's a massive system. Massive.
Yeah.
And so there are certain areas and lakes that are lake trout lakes that you'd want to go to. So when you mentioned the research part of it, that's great. Do that and reach out to some of the outfitters. There are guides that go in daily, so that gives you the experience. And this is a place where you can go as a like a church group. Mm-hmm. A lot of church groups go up there. A lot of summer camps. They do go into the Boundary Waters. Yeah. But I'm waiting, and I'm like ready to pull the pin on grabbing my boys and going up there, and then eventually all my kids. But once they hit kind of that, I mean, they're
the perfect age that they'll be open for it, ready for it. And then it's going to be less, they're going to be more likely to want to continue doing it. I think if you throw somebody in there that's, you know, maybe already a little bit older, they might be a little bit more intimidated, but if you get them started young.
Maybe, but I just don't know that there's ever a wrong time to do it. Like if you ever have the chance, you know, I mean, it's just one of those places that you just got to do it. If, you know, a couple things to think about. Number one would be mosquitoes, you know, and then number two would be black flies.
Yeah.
Those two
The harsh reality.
Critters, that's the one reality that can really change the experience for you. Yeah. So,
what do you do for it?
I kill them. Yeah. I try.
Do you bring a head net?
Yeah.
Head nets.
Bug spray. Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely, even on hot days, I've got long pants on sometimes because they just go after your ankles and you just lose your mind sometimes. My
clothes still all smell like bug spray from 3 weeks ago, and they've gone through the wash multiple times. And I use like the natural stuff, so it smells like citronella. Yeah. But my favorite thing, other than the head net, is to bring like a buff, like a scarf around your neck, and just douse it in bug spray. And I feel like it kind of keeps them off your like head and face and stuff, even if you don't have your head net on. But
yeah, and I've had days where they're non-existent.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then there are days where they just carry you away. And it's funny because like you jump in the water and you're doing cleaning yourself off, and you don't even really fully dry off, and you're spraying yourself down with bug spray again.
So true.
That's the reality of it. Don't let it scare you or your family from doing it. If you have the chance, Boundary Waters, it's an amazing experience. It'll be a place that you'll leave and say, I cannot wait to do this again, because there is so much to explore up there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we could do a whole another half hour on the Boundary Waters. So that was number 1A for me. Go ahead.
Are you doing 1B or should I go?
I'll go next. After you. Yeah.
So my first choice is Lake of the Woods.
That was my 1B.
I was thinking that might be your first choice. I thought we might tie for first. And specifically, so my experience, I've just been up there twice, and both it was just 3 nights. So not, you know, super long trips. And both times I went in Ontario, actually specifically Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge. So it was an island lodge. We, you know, crossed the border in Baudette, went up to Morson, and then boated over to this place. And that to me, I mean, talk about pristine, beautiful, just, you know, quintessential North Woods type of feel. Lake of the Woods is definitely that. There's so much water up there, so much to explore that, you know, I hope to get back up and try more things. But that location for me, I'd say, was like one of the most formative places for me in my love of fishing in general, and definitely musky fishing. Yep. I've done exclusively muskies up there. I know that there's great smallmouth walleyes. You know, a lot of people where I was staying were actually up there for walleye fishing, but that's something, you know, everyone hears about Lake of the Woods. And I think I kind of, you know, grew up thinking it was more of a numbers area. And I think sometimes people think that, but there are huge fish up there too. And
lots of fish, big fish.
And big fish. Yeah, really big fish. And for me, it was like definitely a big, I think, confidence thing where for me when I was up there, it was probably 6 years ago the first time. And that's where I think I went from being, you know, an angler who never really felt like I was, you know, in charge of the boat, right? I'd be with people who knew a little bit more and whatever. And then when I was up there, I felt like I got that confidence of I'm choosing the next spot. You know, here's where we're going to go, and kind of picking apart a pattern and things like that. So for me, that personal experience was huge. But then it's just, it's really hard to beat for when we talk musky fishing. It's hard to beat Lake of the Woods.
It is. It's a gem. It's been a gem longer than we've been alive. Mm-hmm. It will continue to be a gem because it's so massive, so big. There's a lot of, we talked on our last episode about muskies and Minnesota and the stocking program. And there are other lakes like St. Clair, Green Bay. I mean, big musky destinations. But Lake of the Woods has always been near the top. And it's just one of those bodies of water that I'm with you. That's why I put it as, it's hard to like choose between Lake of the Woods and the Boundary Waters. So it's like one.
Something too about it that I think is, I've always actually gone in like August, so really good bucktail bite. And it is one of the best lakes to get figure eight muskies.
Yeah.
Because they can't see very well. It's not clear water. And I think almost every muskie that I've encountered and caught have all been in the figure eight.
Really?
And it's just, yeah, it's a blast.
Yeah.
Great way to practice it. And
you mentioned that, you know, you get a lot of confidence going to a place like that. And some people look at it and say, it's so big, it's intimidating. And I hear that a lot about Lake Minnetonka because I, you know, grew up guiding out there and take a lot of people, and they just always are intimidated by the size of it. And I was like, no.
Fish anywhere.
Fish anywhere. That's the beauty of it. And like you talked about, it's a bucktail bite. Well, it's also, August is a great topwater bite.
Yeah, you know,
and you can fish points, you can fish reefs, you can fish flats, you can fish weeds, you can fish sand. Like there are no, there's no rules.
Yeah.
You can't, it's like only here. No, that's the fun of it. There are so many places to go. So I have stayed on Lake of the Woods. I mean, as long as we're on this lake, we'll just continue.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been up there to multiple different places and I like to do it myself kind of thing to figure it out. So my first time ever fishing up there, and really Actually, now that I think about it, I've never gone with a guide up there, so I don't know what they would do different. But I've been out of, gosh, I can't think of the name of it. It went through the Minnesota side, and you can actually boat right through it if you wanted to. But I did drive through and go to it. Harris Hill Lodge, that's what it's called. And it's a Cheryl and her husband, I forget his name on top of my head right now. This was like 10 years ago, maybe longer. Anyway, we went out and caught as many walleyes as you could handle. And then I'm like, I'm going to go see if I can catch some muskies. And I couldn't keep them off the line. It was so awesome. And we just went up into the islands, and so I fished there. But Ballard's Black Island Lodge is another one. Wiley Point, which is part of the Totem Lodges, that's out of the Sioux Narrows. So that's like an hour and a half through Ontario. And then you come in and then you boat like 45 minutes into the lodge. Mm-hmm. But my favorite place, Natalie, this is my all-time favorite place to go to. It's an outpost camp in Lake of the Woods. It's called the French Portage Outpost Camp.
Okay.
I filmed a TV show up there probably like 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. And we went up in September. And this, if you want like the ultimate cast and blast adventure, try going to the French Portage Lodge one time. Cool. It's like this little cabin. And it's sitting on an island and you don't have all the amenities. So it's a little bit rustic. You can sleep up to, 2, 4, 6. It was like probably, you could probably sleep like 10 guys if you wanted to. They did have power there. There's not running, maybe running water. I'm trying to remember. It's an outhouse. And I don't remember if they had a shower, but it doesn't matter.
No bells and whistles, yes, just
exactly.
What you need.
Yeah. It's kind of rustic. Yeah. But, okay, so on the dock, you can catch, we caught all the walleyes we could possibly handle on the dock. So we caught our shore lunch right there, including northern smallmouth bass. We had like 6 species of fish off the dock. Was it like a drop off?
Was it deep? Was it shallow?
It's like 15, 20 feet on the dock. Okay. There's kind of a narrow point that comes through it, and it's just unbelievable fishing on the dock. We didn't leave. We had our walleye shore lunch without unhooking the boats, but you're in musky area. So we did do that. We did leave and we went after muskies. We also brought our duck decoys and bird dogs. Within 100 yards behind the cabin, we were covered up in grouse.
Wow.
And it's cool because the crown land, the government owns a bunch of the land up there, kind of like our public land here. They call it crown land up there. And you could pull up to any island and just start hunting. And the rough grouse up there don't know what a human is.
I'm surprised you ever came back.
I know, exactly. So then the next morning, we set up our duck decoys on the backside of that island. There's a bunch of rice. And with 4 guys, we shot our limit of ducks so fast that everyone was bummed that the hunt was over.
Yeah.
And then geese came in too. So it's kind of one of those places where the locals up there say, we don't really promote the waterfall hunting but we know how good we've got it here. Yeah. And it's one of those places where like you don't have enough hours in the day to do it all. It's just an unbelievable place to go to just,
really
if you've got a group of buddies that you want to go on just like a cool do it all kind of trip, put the French Portage outpost camp on your list. And I know there's some other outpost camps up there. It's about a 45-50 minute boat ride in from the mainland, but you just get away. Mm-hmm. And you do have amenities. You do have a cabin. You're not camping. You do have a dock to tie up to. It's a nice dock. So it's not like you're pulling up on a sandy beach and you have to worry about storms. It's just got it all.
That's amazing. And something to keep in mind while I'm thinking about it for probably a lot of these places. I know Tamarack, I think it's got 8 or 9 cabins. And I think, a lot of places up there are going to be similar situations and they can book up fast. I know Tamarack, at least it's, there's weekends available in the year, but it's a good thing to plan ahead if you can. I'm imagining that the place you were just mentioning is the same. So,
yeah, I will say, actually, I talked to the Ballard's family not long ago, a few weeks ago, and they said that they're doing a 2-for-1 special this summer because there are not getting a lot of the anglers to cross the border because of the vaccination.
Yeah.
So if you are vaccinated and you can go on a fishing trip up into Canada, you can pay for one and, split the cost with somebody. It's a 2-for-1, and they're up in the islands as well. So that could be a similar thing with some of the other lodges up there right now.
Yeah.
Now, the Big Lake is still amazing, too. You don't have to go into the Canadian side to fish on Lake of the Woods. Big Traverse Bay is, I mean, obviously that in itself is a walleye fishing destination. There are a lot of outfitting operations up there. Ballard's is one of them. You know, there's just a whole bunch of them on the Minnesota side that you can go to as well. Have you ever done that?
No. No? Never. I know. Yeah. I feel like... I feel bad saying I've only fished the Canadian side.
Yeah, the Canadian side is really good. You're not a trader. There's a reason people go there. And when you do go there, whenever it happens, if it's this summer or next summer for whoever wants to make that happen, you'll realize why it is like on everyone's list. It always is near the top of everybody's list.
And it's far enough if, you know, if people are on the Twin Cities to feel like you're really getting away. But it's doable. You know, you can drive there. It's, you know, 5.5-6 hours, so you can do it for a few days. So it's really good balance.
Yeah, and even in the winter, my family, we have a nice Castle Fish House, and that was our winter between Christmas and New Year's. My wife and kids, like, we're going to go camping out on the ice. And they didn't have too much snow, so we could just pull it out there. And unfortunately, right after Christmas, the blizzard hit up there. You don't want to be out there during a blizzard. My wife was at that time 8.5 months pregnant, so we just decided not to do it. So it's doable for like you know, a long weekend.
Yeah,
from the Twin Cities, it's a little over 6 hours to get up to the Minnesota side of Lake of the Woods. Mm. Worth every minute of it.
Love it.
Yep. Okay. So we both
next on the list. Both, yeah.
Okay. So that's Boundary Waters number one, Lake of the Woods number two for me. What's your number two?
So my number two is the Hayward area of Wisconsin. Yeah. And specifically, I'm putting up there for smallmouth fishing because that was more of a surprise for me. So a lot of people are familiar with Hayward.
Muskies.
You know, yeah, absolutely. And the first probably, you know, I don't know, 10 times or so I went up there was four muskies. There's so many muskie lakes up there. It's, you know, a ton of fun. But I've the last 5 years, probably three or four of them, I've gone up in like May or June for smallmouth and had an absolute blast. And I think something that was most exciting for me is I feel like oftentimes when you see those like early season smallmouth, you know, people holding up pictures of 5-6 pound smallmouth, it's usually on like a great lake. You're, you know, pretty far out. And being able to have that experience, but in that like real North Woods feel, you know, right by the, you know, green shoreline, I think is really special. And especially the water up there, that's the clear water. It feels like I'm going to out myself of one of my bucket list destinations is on my list, but it feels almost like flats fishing in like salt water, like in Florida, if anybody's done that. Fishing for those fish in like super clear water. It's a blast.
They call them footballs for a reason.
They
you know,
really
and you
are.
Can see those dark things swimming around in the water when you get in those really clear lakes like that. Yeah. It's super
and
fun.
Especially like windy days, a lot of the last few years that I've gone up there. And another thing too is I actually usually have been doing it in a there and back from the Twin Cities. So it's good if
same
you can
day?
Make same day. Yeah. I mean, it's 2.5 hours. Three,
it feels
maybe.
Like it should be farther than that from the Twin Cities.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Yeah. If I can, I'll definitely make a weekend out of it. But if, you know, you only have a day like I often do, you can make it there and back. But just had a ton of fun on like, especially I feel like I've always been up there on really windy days and, you know, fishing for them with jerk baits, casting basically like up to shore.
You've never
that
had
time
a bad
year.
Trip there?
Never had a bad trip. There's been days a few years ago where I caught like two or three. Maybe a little bit more than that, but the last couple of years I've caught, you know.
So Hayward Lake, smallmouth, not muskies.
Well, and muskies too. And the other thing about it too is, you know, Hayward in itself is a great place to visit. So if you're going up there, you know, with a family or with people that don't like to fish as much, or if you want to like tack on extra time, there's, you know, have you been to Hayward?
Yeah.
Have you spent time there?
Yeah.
Ton of fun.
I've
great area.
I've caught some muskies in Hayward
okay.
before
yeah.
and shot grouse up there before.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good area. And
it
I
is.
Just think, you know, the town's great. There's like the Moccasin Bar has the... possibly, very highly debated, but possibly biggest muskie ever caught on the wall. Have you seen that?
Oh, the debate goes on.
Yeah,
and
it's one
forever.
Of about 12
yes.
that are maybe not the best the biggest muskie ever caught. So there's a ton of things to do in that area too.
Yep, it's historic for muskie fishing as well. And that really gets better as the summer goes along, but it's cool to have the smallmouth option.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a pressured area, but there's a ton of lakes.
What isn't pressured around here though?
That's true.
If we're being honest, what is not pressured? I have a
just gotta be better than the next guy or gal.
I have a couple down my list that are not pressured at all.
Ooh,
yes, we'll get to those. Now, when you go to Hayward, do you have any specific lakes that you like to start out, or do you want to keep that a top secret?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the, you know, Round Lake is one that I've fished a few times. I grew up always hearing about Le Couderay, and so I knew when I grew up, like, oh, I'm going to someday fish on Le Couderay. I've not had it. No, but I was out there for a couple hours years ago with some friends, and we'd never been on it before. But Grindstone's great. That's super clear.
I wonder if Le Couderay just seems like a place to go because it has a sweet name.
It has such a cool name. As a kid, it was like this exotic place that someday I'm going to visit.
You know? When I was guiding for muskies full-time, there were a lot of clients that I had that'd be like, oh yeah, I fished Le Couderay over in Wisconsin. And I was like, how'd it go? And they go, terrible. Didn't catch anything. It was awful. 4 days. We saw two fish. And I'm like, gosh. And then I hear this from the next person too. I'm like, so is this just not a very good lake? Like, it's a sweet name.
But... I've spent almost no time there, but...
All right. So you kind of think it's a good area, but no, it's not.
Well, there's better lakes. There's better lakes. I like Grindstone.
All right, moving along. My number three, I'm going the other direction from the Twin Cities, way out in North Dakota, Lake Sakakawea. Lake Sakakawea is part of the Missouri River. It's a reservoir. And just like Lake Oahe in South Dakota, Lake Sakakawea is... one of the most unbelievable, overlooked fisheries in America. And right now, today, it is so plump full of giant walleyes. And that's kind of what people know for it or know about it. But the smallmouth bass fishing in Lake Sakakawea is world class. I was out there a few years ago and we were trying to film, this was in the fall, and we were trying to film... part of the adventure was we were pheasant hunting because the Army Corps of Engineers own the land around Lake Sakakawea. And up to a certain point, if you have an Onyx map, you can see where the boundaries are. Great hunting. But the walleye fishing is so phenomenal too. So we were still in Blaze Orange, pulled up, we got some pheasants, and we're like, all right, let's do the walleye part. And we... depending on where we were at, we had to leave spots because the smallmouth bass would not, you couldn't make a cast without catching
them. Wow.
And I'm not talking like a 1 or 2 pounder. I mean, 4, 5 pounders were common. It was like...
what time of year did you say?
This was in the fall. Okay. It was in October when we were doing it. But I was just talking to a friend that works for North Dakota Tourism. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know what? Everyone seems to come out here for the walleye fishing. But he's like, I think that it might be the best smallmouth fishery in the Midwest. And it would rival Mille Lacs. It's funny you say that because my last experience there was just like, why aren't people here fishing for it? It's a giant, giant reservoir. When we were there in October, we didn't see another boat.
Wow.
We didn't see another boat.
Getting my notebook out and write this one down.
I'm telling you, this is a destination that most people are not talking about, and they should be. Now, there's some walleye tours that go out there and walleye tournaments that are really showing just like how unbelievable this resource is. But they have these, you know, they're smelt. And so the forage is a little bit different than what a lot of people traditionally are used to. When I fished it, I put on a Rapala jigging wrap, and you know, we were in like 60 feet of water, and you chuck a jigging wrap and it's heavy, and you could throw it into like 10 feet of water. Mm-hmm. You rip it and it goes flying down this break, and it doesn't make it back to the boat. It never made it back. It was either a walleye, a smallmouth bass, white bass. I'm going to go back this fall because the salmon run in the end of October and early November is supposed to be just unbelievable. But I've seen what that lake is like that time of the year. I would put that like, it's just an unbelievable resource. I have a buddy that lives right next to the lake and every day he's out there. I talked to him this morning on the way in and he goes, yeah, I was out yesterday. I go, how was he? He goes, I don't know. We caught like 50 walleyes and you know, that's just the norm. The thing is,
they must get so spoiled. People,
I told him that.
Like,
I told him you have no idea how good you have. He goes, I know. Everybody tells me that. You know, there's just, it's not a large population of people that live around it. So it doesn't see the pressure that a lake of 3,000 acres here in Minnesota would see. Mm-hmm. And yet it's however many hundreds of thousands. I forget how many it is. And it fluctuates based on rainfall, moisture. You know, they raise and lower it. The Army Corps manages the lake, just like the whole Missouri River system. But it is world class.
Yeah.
If you've ever... heard of it maybe from somebody, and now you're hearing me talk about it again, consider this as your I'm pushing you over the ledge to do it.
No excuses.
No excuses. You will come back and you're going to be like, and if you want to catch giant northern pike, oh yeah, they've got that.
Wow.
If you want lake trout, oh yeah, they've got that.
They need to hire you. I'm ready to go. I'm booking my trip. Yes. I'm not familiar with that area at all. Is it an easy place to get? Are there, you know, places to stay, lodges?
Yeah, it's a freeway.
Okay.
Just take a freeway through North Dakota. I'm not seeing any downside here. Well, it's a long drive.
Yeah.
From the Twin Cities, I'm going to say 8 hours.
Okay.
And
it's a commitment.
You're there 8 or 9. So, yep, it's a commitment. But, you know, sometimes if you're going to drive 5 or 6 hours to get somewhere, the extra 2 or 3 hours is true. Just like, you know, like we just talked about Lake of the Woods. We could have said Lac Seul. Mm-hmm. Go another 2 hours north of that, mm-hmm. and you're even more remote. The further away you get from people, the better the outdoor opportunities tend to get because of the fact that we can deplete a resource.
Yeah.
We have an impact on it. And when we don't have as much of an impact on it, we can you can experience something amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Excited about that one.
You're up.
All right. So sticking regionally then, I will go with my next one. Okay. Something really close to home. Very easily overlooked by a lot of people, even that live where we are in the Twin Cities. And that is the Minneapolis chain of lakes. So this is one for people that maybe are in or around the Twin Cities that maybe don't have any open weekends this summer, or, you know, think that they can't get out of town. I can't tell you how many people I know that are from right where we are in the Twin Cities that never fish those lakes. Obviously so Minneapolis chain of lakes, it's going to be, you know,
Harriet,
Lake of the Isles, Calhoun. Harriet, Calhoun, which is now Bidet, Makaska, something,
right.
Cedar Lake, Brownie. So those areas right in Minneapolis. And to me, again, it's not, you know, a travel destination. The fishing isn't going to be up to par necessarily with a lot of the places that we've talked about already, but there are really good fish in those lakes. There's, you know, people everywhere, but to me, you know, there's good largemouth bass,
there's excellent
pike,
largemouth bass.
Yeah, and there's really good muskies in some of those lakes. And, you know, I'll say there's been a few times where I've hoisted a muskie, you know, into my kayak with a skyline in the back.
Pick one then, if you could just pick one of those lakes for a day.
So my favorite of those, honestly, to fish is probably Lake of the Isles, and it's because it's really easy to fish from shore. If you can get out in like a kayak, these lakes have motor restrictions. But if you can get out in a kayak, it's great. You know, all the little islands in there that's just stacked up with bass and pike and stuff. But I love going out for an hour and a half in the morning at sunrise, especially like this time of year. It's really good for topwater fishing, hollow body frogs. You know, you can catch really good
bass.
Isn't it? It really is. Yeah. I could just like stick with that every day.
Yeah.
But no, it's a ton of fun. And again, when we talk about things that are, you know, accessible to more people, it's really hard to beat Minneapolis chain of lakes. You know, you can, you know, there's some public transportation, there's easy parking nearby. You can just walk right on
shore. Is there though? Cause that's why we hang up with it.
Yeah. There's parking, especially Lake of the Isles. You know, you can find, there's some pay to park lots around like Harriet and other places, but there's street parking too, especially if you go early in the morning. So I love them. And I think, there's a lot of people that I know that are like, oh, I want to go fishing, but I don't have time to, you know, drive 2 hours north. And I'm like, you don't need to. You don't even need to go, you know, do, you know, Lake of Minnetonka and things like that.
So it's interesting. I just said, you know, like Lake Sakakawea, the population is very low there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a polar opposite population here. But because of the motor restrictions, it doesn't get fished like a Lake Minnetonka would, where it just gets hammered by people in tournaments every third day or second day or whatever. I think that is a great lake. I've fished Calhoun or, dang it.
Bidet Makaska,
yes,
I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
The largemouth bass are huge in that lake. Yeah. I mean, it is. There's some bass fishermen that are probably, if they heard this, they'd be like, shut up.
To be honest, I'm holding back a little bit on this.
Knock it off, Natalie. Come on.
Because, there's some special fish in those lakes.
There are huge fish in that, and big walleyes in there, too.
Yeah.
Yep. It's very, very overlooked by the million people surrounding
it. For sure.
Yes.
And if you're not from the Twin Cities and you want to have yourself a nice, you know, city weekend and do city stuff, go to museum, whatnot, and you want to, you know, pencil some fishing into that, too.
Mm-hmm. It's probably a lot easier for kayak. I find... Yeah. My hang up with going there more often is I just trying to figure out a trailer parking space.
That's
the hard part.
Yeah, because there's good launches on Bidet Makaska and Harriet. Well, Harriet's got the lot that I think that there's trailer parking. You have to pay for it though.
Yeah.
Right by the band shell.
All right. We're going to keep rolling here. Mille Lacs, it's just an incredible fishery, an hour and a half from the Twin Cities. It's a place that people come from all over the country to experience a smallmouth bass fishing. I used to guide up there when I was in high school and college. I just love it because, yes, it's a big lake, and yes, the wind can kick your butt out there, but if you find the smallmouth bass or the walleyes, and there's so many ways to catch them, even though the walleye limits and you know the season closures and the way they're trying to manage it can be a little bit tough to wrap your head around, the fish are there. They're aggressive. It's fun to fish. And on top of that, I would spend the whole month of November fishing muskies up there because it's one thing to catch a 50-inch muskie. There's another thing to catch a 50-pound muskie.
Yeah, they get wide.
Yeah, they're huge fish up there. The muskies in that lake eat the tulipy, and in November, the tulipy move in on the shallow rocks to spawn. So you have a window throughout the season where those giant muskies that only roam out in the middle of that huge abyss eating roaming tulipy that don't relate to structure at any time of the year other than, you know, early November. And if I were to pick, I always would tell people they would fly in and I would say your best, my experience is the best muskie chance at a state record. It was always November 4th through the 15th. And it just seemed like you bundled up. There were days where we couldn't get out and fish where I wanted to because it would be too cold. The waves would crash over the front of the boat and that would turn to ice. And there have been people that have died out there in November because they fell out of the boat. And if there's anything slippery, nope, you can't go in the front of my boat. That's off limits now.
One of those things you don't want to, and I always say this about kayak fishing too, especially when it gets late in the year like that, like just don't go alone. Go with a group of people, throw on a life jacket, even if you're fishing out of a boat, you know.
It was probably like 12 or 13 years ago. I was out there with a couple guys from New York and we heard about a boat that was about 3 miles from us that was found just washed up on shore. And the guy was out there and then there were helicopters flying. He was fishing solo.
Yeah.
Something happened, slipped, went in. You're wearing a lot of layers
and
you can't get yourself back out. The boat's drifting with the wind. It's just a bad deal. So yeah, if you can go with a friend. But this, you know, time of the year, and you just talked about the city lakes, roughly an hour and a half, depending on which part of the metro you're in. But I do day trips up to Mille Lacs all the time. Mm-hmm. All the time. It's a great fishery. I love it for all of those reasons. And even if the wind is blowing, you can still kind of find a way, you know, like all sides of the lake are good. So everyone says, well, where do you like to go? And it depends on the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've got GPS coordinates on every corner.
I've had my butt kicked by wind out there before.
Yeah, definitely.
But we caught great fish, so it was worth it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. All right. Yeah.
Cool. The next one I'm going to go with is kind of a, you know, wherever we are, 4 or 5 A and B. I'll go with the first one, and that's going to be Vilas County, Wisconsin. Okay. Have you been up there?
I can't say that I have.
So when I lived in Chicago for a number of years, and that's actually where I always went. So weekends, and it was a hike from Chicago. It was, you know, 5 hours or so, but I think it's similar from the Twin Cities. I think roughly in that 5 hour range, but there's a handful of lakes up there and it's got a really fun, cool history. Similar thing if you've got some people that aren't fishing or if you want to, you know, take a break, there's a lot of fun things to do in that area too. So I fished a lot, Manitouish Waters, Turtle Flambeau Flowage, Presque Isle, I think is technically in Vilas County. And I fished it like kind of all year long from, you know, early season in June through sucker fishing, you know, late in the fall. Again,
musky destination, more than anything.
Musky destination, yes. Thank you for, in my experience, when I was fishing there, that's all I was fishing for at the time. I think I'd caught like two bass in my life.
You need to expand your horizons a little bit. I know.
I'm working on it slowly. Yeah. Just wait till we talk about saltwater stuff on a future episode.
Okay.
But no, so that's a really fun area. And a little tidbit if you're going up there. So I mentioned some of the lakes, but there's a lot up there. Definitely a lot of, you know, people travel in to visit there. But there is a non-fishing related tidbit. Let me make sure I get the name of the town right. I think it's in Manitouish Waters. Have you heard of Little Bohemia?
Yeah.
Have you heard of this restaurant?
Yeah.
Or lodge?
Yeah.
Okay. So that was always my favorite place.
And restaurant.
Yeah. Yes. So if you go up there, musky fishing's very good and you got to stop at Little Bohemia. It is a lodge and restaurant that has a very rich history of, you know, old Chicago gangsters from like the Roaring Twenties going up there. Have you seen the movie Public Enemies or Public Enemy? The Johnny Depp, John Dillinger one?
I don't think I have.
I think they filmed part of it there, but long story short, John Dillinger, you know, famous Chicago mobster, had a shootout in that building. And I think it was like 1929, 1930 or so. And in the building, there's literally still like bullet holes in the side.
On,
yeah, there's like memorabilia.
On.
There's an old
Brandon's
car.
Brandon's not buying it.
Johnny Depp went there.
I am buying it.
So, I love about, so I, growing up, there was this marina on Lake Waconia where I fish as a kid, and I got to know a lot of the old timers that would drink coffee there, and they would tell all these stories. And I swear, everywhere you go, they're always like, "Oh yeah, the Al Capone and his mobsters would come out here." And you know, there's an island on Lake Waconia, and there used to be a hotel out there, and they had bars, and there was when Prohibition, and they talk about like
the caves in St. Paul.
Oh yeah,
yes, everybody has stories
about not to glorify that lifestyle, but it's pretty cool today to go and look at some of that stuff.
Yes, anyway, I love it when I hear those stories, and it makes me wonder. Did Al Capone visit every single lake?
I think so. I think so.
He might have. He's been everywhere.
It's literally a good place to hide things.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Cool.
But anyway, so go for the musky fishing. Stay for the
history.
The history.
Cool.
Yeah, Vilas County.
Very cool. I'm going to go again across the border the other way. I'm going to go into South Dakota, the Glacial Lakes region of South Dakota. Have you ever fished out there?
No, I haven't.
It is really, Brandon's giving it a thumbs up. What's your experience there?
It's beautiful out there. I've just traveled through there several times. I've gone camping out that way as well. It's just awesome. It's really cool out there.
A lot of my experience has been during the winter season out there. The fishing is fantastic. Again, the population is not nearly what it is here in the Twin Cities, metro area, in surrounding areas, but a lot of people drive over there because the fishing is outstanding. Walleyes, perch.
We haven't talked about perch much.
Yeah, perch, jumbo perch, that's become hot the last 10 years, along with a bunch of potholes up in North Dakota, too. I mean, it's in the northeast corner of South Dakota. So from the metro of Minnesota, when I think I've done a day trip out there, but I usually think about it as just over 3 hours to get there. But pan fishing is excellent as well. And that's kind of, they're fertile lakes. They go through these cycles, but they cycle really, 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 really fast because of the jumbo, shrimp. Mm. Or wait, did I say that? Freshwater shrimp. I'm thinking jumbo perch, freshwater. Yeah. So the freshwater shrimp is the forage in those systems that create huge fish and they grow super fast. So all the panfish grow really quickly. Interestingly enough, is a little, probably more information than most people want to know, but a lot of times there'll be these hot bites on these lakes, and there'll be just hundreds of people going there, and then the next year they can't catch a perch. They're going there for the jumbo perch. Mm-hmm. So a DNR biologist told me that the perch cycle out there in five-year windows, and typically if you get a high water year, they come up into the shallows, and the brush on the shoreline is where they lay their eggs, and that's how they spawn, the perch do. So after a high water year, which, hint, hint, 2 years ago, high water, be thinking about this for your future plans, because in the next 2 and 3 years, some of those lakes out there are going to peak again, probably with an incredible jumbo perch bite. And you're talking huge perch like we don't have in most lakes here in Minnesota or Wisconsin. It's an amazing fishery, big northern pike. The walleye fishing is outstanding. It's cool. You're out on the prairie. And it's a little bit different. We think of a lot of our lakes here, you know, and them being, you know, up in the North Woods. It's just different that way. And when you go there, you're like, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
There are some family-friendly resorts out there. Because it's become such a popular fishing destination in the last 10 years, there's more opportunities out there resort-wise.
Sounds like a great place for kids to fish, too.
It is. Yeah, the waters are clear and clean. It's just cool. It's a cool place to go. You're up.
I love it. Well, I can keep rifling off some. Do we want to go to some of our listener input?
We don't have time for listeners right now because there's so much.
There's so much. Let's rifle through. Let me just kind of list off a couple others. But then, so we did put on Instagram asking for, you know, people's favorites, and we got a lot of good responses.
I almost feel like we need to come back because I have some that I want to dig into, Natalie.
Yeah.
We're on a time limit today. We're less than 10 minutes left in the show. I have a couple that I think could take almost 10 minutes. But if you want to find a place that's way off the grid, it's worth it. So do we want to have next week's episode be part two of this?
I think we need to.
On air production meeting, Brandon.
Yes.
Part two is in order. Yeah.
Part two is in order because I've only got through half of my list and we have like 20 viewer submissions as well on top of it. Let's each do one more.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'll do my 1B or no, 6B, wherever we were from the last one, really nearby Vilas County. If you're headed up that direction, you can make a pit stop in Oneida County. I think I'm saying that right. So it's another northern Wisconsin. I feel like I need more Minnesota choices. I keep going to Canada
like
and Wisconsin. I know.
There. Yeah, what the heck?
I know. At least I did the Minneapolis Chain of Lakes, you know? Yeah. But okay, so Oneida County, Wisconsin. So Rhinelander. You heard of Rhinelander?
Yeah, home Hodang country.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Have you ever been Brandon, Hodang. Have you ever been to Hodang country?
But have you seen the Hodang?
Yes, it's this mythical creature that has like horns coming out.
Well, it's debated. Like some people, it's green. Some people, it kind of looks like a bear. It kind of depends. Yeah. But we know it definitely exists.
Yes.
For sure, it's up there. But no, there's some little like sculptures and stuff. But in addition to the Hodang, there's also some good musky fishing up there. Bearskin Lake. I feel like I'm, you know, I have mixed feelings about giving away specific lakes, but it's a really good lake up there. I think it's actually like 20 minutes or so outside of Rhinelander, but I've had some great experience fishing up there. Some, you know, sucker fishing late in the fall. It's great for that. I caught my first ever figure eight muskie on Bearskin Lake in, I think it was August, like 8 years ago or something like that. So that's a great area. And it's also, you know, tons to do in the area as well. Rhinelander's a cool little town. So
it is a cool little town. Yeah. When you're in Hodang country, like they're all over the place. Those Hodangs. And I remember the first time I went there, it's like, I don't remember who it was. It was a wedding that we were going to. And this one guy kept saying, you know where you are? You're in Hodang country. So like it's
such
seared
pride
into my brain. Yes. Yeah. I will do one more myself. And this is going, I'm going to pick. Shupak Lake.
Yay! I'm so excited you're doing this one.
Yes.
Have you been?
Yeah.
Okay, because I haven't been and I wanted to speak to it.
So this is why I say we need to do another part because there's a lot to get into this. Now, this is a lake that the history behind it, Shupak Lake, which I know you like it because it's a musky lake and it's landlocked and it has its own strain of muskies, the Shupak strain of muskies. So when the DNR started stocking Minnesota's lakes back in the 80s, for the most part, they took Leech Lake strain, Shupak Lake strain, and Mississippi River strain. I believe those are the three. And they were trying to figure out what grows best and where. Mm-hmm. And they found the Shupak Lake strain. I think there was also a Wisconsin strain too. But anyway, they stocked a bunch of lakes with the Shupak strain, and they realized that they didn't grow as fast and they didn't grow as big. And of course, we as muskie hunters want the biggest fish that grow the fastest. And but they are super aggressive in this lake. And if you
plentiful.
Yeah. I mean, I caught like 3 or 4 muskies in 5 casts at one point.
Oh,
it was ridiculous. I mean,
I don't think I've ever heard those words in a sentence together.
Yeah.
3 or 4 muskies in 5 casts.
Well, it's a place that is extremely doable. I went up there with a guy. He's like, I want to catch one on the fly rod. Done. Consider it done. And it doesn't matter. I mean, there's a certain mentality to that fish that I figured out. Not saying that they wouldn't eat any of your standard musky tackle presentations. They would, but you're talking fish that generally top out at the high 30, you know, low 40-inch range. But very aggressive, a lot of fun. I found, and there's a MEPS musky killer bucktail with the willow leaf. So there's something that I've learned over the years about, I'm getting really into the weeds here right now, but northern pike, muskies, they have a, like, something attracts them differently. Northern pike have always found that a willow leaf blade on a bucktail or a spinnerbait, you tend to get more fish, northern pike, to eat that than a Colorado blade.
Hmm.
It just, if I'm really targeting northern, the willow blade. Okay, so if you go after tiger muskies specifically, they've got a lot of those tendencies. So I found that, you know, like the standard cowgirl, which is a lot of people use, or, you know, different variations of the Colorado blades, smaller sizes, 8s, 10s, 6s, whatever. But the willow leaf seems to be better. I found that the Shupak strain of musky really favored that. So the willow blade, and then I just brought my bass, a couple of bass rods and on baitcasters. And then you have a really fun battle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a, I mean, it's still a musky. It's still aggressive. Right. They still go out to the figure eight, you know, and there's a lot of them. But this is why it's unique, and this is why it doesn't get fished very hard, is because you have to work your butt off to get there. So
isn't there like one single access too?
Yeah, there's one access point that gets you there. You have to get a permit for the campsite. There's one campsite on the lake, and there's a system to get in. So you got to go through Lake Cabotogama. There's a drop-off point. So somebody has to take you to this drop-off point. You have two keys, okay? And you get to this drop-off point, and it's a trail. And it is a marked trail, but it's a deer trail. Not wider than a deer trail. Very narrow. And it's about a mile into the first point where you use your first key. Because there, you will get a key that unlocks a bin that has paddles. And there's
is there like
also
a treasure map that comes
it
with
is.
This?
Yes,
like, this
exactly.
Is amazing.
It's amazing. It is so cool. So then you get the key to unlock this bin, and then it unlocks another key that is chained up to the canoe. You got two paddles, and now you have a canoe. You take that across Little Shupak Lake, and you paddle across. Then you go through this marshy area and you find another deer trail, and it takes you like another quarter mile or a half mile, and you get another key, and that unlocks the padlock for the John boat that's waiting there with oars. So you got an oar boat, no motor. It's a, it's like a, I want to say it's a 14 foot John boat,
so you
flat
can bring,
bottom boat.
You know, plenty of tackle. Yeah.
So
and
I did backpack, a backpack with camping supplies. And then one tackle box and a fishing pole. And it's an adventure to get in there. It's super cool. It doesn't get fished very much. You know, but we, I want to say like we got in there after a few hours and we fished for like 3 or 4 hours and we caught like 20 muskies or something like that. We set up camp.
How does somebody go about reserving this?
You can just Google it. Okay. Yeah. And you have to go through, I don't know if it's Voyageurs National Park, it's something like that. It might be Voyageurs that you have to get the permit through. And that's how you get the keys that open up these. Because you're not going to carry a canoe through a mile and a half of forest. There's one there and you it's there when you come back and you lock it back up. And there's kind of like your list. It's so cool.
That's amazing.
It's so cool. And the DNR
that's
found
that's a
it.
Unique fishing experience.
It is.
Sure.
It's do it once in your life. If you're, if you know, like you love musky fishing, I love it too. A lot of people do, but you don't have to love musky fishing to go on that kind of adventure. It's similar to like a Boundary Waters experience because it's so remote. There's a lot of, it's just rewarding. Some people that go up to Cabotogama, they'll do it as a day trip in, and you can totally do that. You don't have to camp. We camped. There's one island in the middle of it. It's beautiful. You wake up and you're looking at it. I mean, it's just like there were blueberries all around. We ate all the blueberries we could handle, and we were one with the bears. And we, you know, we brought some of our own food to cook up there. Anyway, it's just truly amazing. So that's really halfway through my list right now, Natalie.
Yeah, I've got plenty more as well.
We could probably talk for days. We could talk for days about these places. But I think we're hopeful that we can give you some ideas on places to go because we've been fortunate to experience them. Most of these that we have mentioned are going to give you memories that you're going to be glad you went there.
For sure.
Bring your kids, take them along, show them these kind of places that they exist. And when they get older, they're going to want to bring you along, you know, and you're going to have memories that you're just going to cherish. We'll be back with part two of unbelievable fishing destinations that we're blessed with right here in our back door in the Midwest. You got more homework. Add a couple more to your list. I'll do the same. And then we got a bunch of viewer topics as well that we'll get to on next week's show. Well, we're out. Natalie, well done.
Thanks as always.
We'll catch you next time on the next episode of Due North Outdoors Podcast.